we are looking at the fourth dwelling place. This is the place where your prayer life kind of transitions and becomes more more spiritual, and it's where God begins to interact with you a lot more than in the previous places where you were doing all the work. He's now starting to do some work. It's also the place where you begin to possibly, and it's not necessary, but where people would sometimes start having spiritual experiences that are unusual, that you can't explain by natural phenomenon. You know, things happen, and many of you probably might have already experienced some of that, and we can talk about that as we go through. But it's the place where, hey, Bob and Dan, it's where God begins to really get involved in your prayer life. And so your prayer life itself becomes more intimate. You're praying more like when you pray to God, you like talking to a good friend and that kind of thing. And so it's just a different way of praying than just saying the standard, you know, prayers like Our Father and all that kind of stuff.
But I was curious about the difference between, and she talks about it, the sweetness of prayer. Mm-hmm. Is that just the sweetness of prayer? And what are we going to talk about? I've lost my words. Consolations.
Consolations, yeah. Yeah, the consolations are something that a lot of people can experience. And they come in the variety is just enormous. You can have all kinds of different consolations and sweetness in prayer, and you don't always know that's
which is which. But yeah. I think a consolation must be much more supernatural.
Yeah, the consolations are generally supernatural. Sometimes the consolations come from things you do, and sometimes the experiences are something that God just sends you. Mm-hmm. That just happens to you, you know. Like one day I was at Mass at Fort Belvoir. They have Mass every day at noon. And so I was sitting there at Mass, and all of a sudden I could smell roses in one nostril and sulfur in the other nostril. And it just happened, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's going on, you know? And I got up to go to communion. As soon as I received, all I smelled was the roses. The sulfur smell went away. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to the priest about it after. He said, well, you know, Satan's always trying to interfere with what the Blessed Mother does. And sulfur is one of the smells of hell, you know. And so that's just something that just happened. And it strikes you funny when it happens because you're not expecting it. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things are things that just, boom, they just come out of the blue, you know. And so they just happen. And I got there early one morning, and I was sitting, I told you about it, I think. I was just sitting there, you know, praying, and nobody else was in the chapel. And I felt somebody come in and touch me on the shoulder while I was saying a prayer, like some people do to say hello, you know. So I finished my prayer, I turned around and see who it was, and there was nobody there. You know? It's like your angel saying, I'm here with you, praying with you, you know, whatever, you know. So you have a lot of these little tiny intimate experiences that better just for you. And sometimes there'll be something that you have that you really realize you should share with other people. Like the time when I saw the beam light come down at Medjugorje, you know. Nobody else saw it, but it shows up in my friend's film when he developed his pictures, you know. Those kind of things. You know, you tell people that happened, they say, oh, you're crazy, you know, because nobody else saw it. And then, yeah. So those things happen. And they come in all varieties of shapes and sizes, you know. And Risa makes the point that you don't really have to have these either. Even if you never have one, it's still okay, because your prayer life is progressing, your prayer life is becoming more intimate, and you're when you're praying, you're actually enjoying prayer. You're praying, and prayer becomes a joy for you, and it becomes much more intimate. So you're talking to a friend. And that's kind of one of the points Teresa makes.
So that would be the sweetness.
The sweetness, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Well, I also think, like, you know, when you you know, encouraging people to say the rosary. And, you know, we hear all different things like, well, it's really hard and, you know, I can't do it. And, you know, I've been saying it for 15 years now or something.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's hard at all, but I think in the beginning it was. And I'm like, why was that hard, you know?
It's like the grace you get that made it not hard.
Yeah.
And then we've heard it from other people that, you know, they've said different things, that it goes by in a minute, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, and different things like that. I can't think of it now that I'm thinking of it, but you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's hard.
Like,
it's
can't hard even when do a decade.
It's hard when your mind is not on what you're praying, too.
Yeah.
You know, if you pray the rosary right, when you're saying the mysteries, you're actually thinking about, and the recommendation is you think about the mystery, mm-hmm. but you can also think about God in other ways, too. You know, there's no thing that says, oh, gosh, if you're saying the mystery of the crown of thorns, if you think about the crucifixion instead, oh, that's terrible, you know. Well, no, it's not.
And that's the biggest complaint, especially from men, is how can you do both? How can you say the words and meditate on the... And it's hard to explain to them that it's kind of, the prayers are like a mantra, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And it really doesn't take that much time. But that's the most common complaint.
Yeah.
Is it time?
With men.
Oh, that
they don't want to say it because... And then when you tell them about the scriptural rosary, they think you're nuts.
Well, I think a lot of people that are in our little group here probably are somewhere in this fourth dwelling place or beyond. You probably have gotten there because your prayer is probably more spiritual than it had been, and it's more intimate than it had been, and so you're beginning to experience some of these things. And when I say experience some of these things, I think you're experiencing the joy of praying, and that your prayer is becoming more intimate with God. It takes on that kind of personal character where you're talking to your best friend kind of thing. As opposed to, you know, the standard thing, Our Father, Hail Mary, and all the rest of that stuff, you know. You're actually talking to your best friend. You're talking to somebody who created your soul. You're talking to somebody who loves you infinitely. And so you begin to actually pray that way. Where you actually realize that. And so that has an influence on your prayer. And so at this point, that's kind of what begins to happen. And so that's kind of where we are. So let's continue.
What was it?
I think we were on 4131 last time. I think we started that. So
okay.
I think we talked about
thing too. What? I had an incense thing happen.
What?
I forgot. It was during COVID, and Pope Francis was going to give a blessing in the Vatican, and it was like empty, and it was during the day. What is that called? OB? Oh, it's a special
Orbi.
Some special blessing.
Orbi or Orbi, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe that was in April. I don't know when it was. And my father just got his cancer diagnosed, so I'm praying and I'm watching it, and I smelled incense. No one else was home, and I smell all this incense, and I'm like, I'm not burning anything.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting on the couch here.
Yeah.
And I go, what is it?
Sure.
And I just take it as, you know, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But I was like, what is it? What is it? It smelled like I was in church.
Well, it's one of the ways it tells you that that God is with you then.
Mm-hmm.
He's giving you a signal that I'm here too.
Took it that way.
Yeah, and when you're praying, I'm here with you praying. And that's the thing that we have to recognize too, that when we're praying, we're not just praying alone. We've got a guardian angel praying with us, there with us all the time praying, and that he's there with you too. And he's praying with you. In fact, one of the lines in that prayer, what's the name of the prayer? The one from the...
Angel of God.
The what?
Angel of God, my guardian.
No, it's the one where It blinds Satan to you.
Oh, the...
Yes.
The Flame of Love?
Flame of Love. I couldn't remember the name of it. But in there, it's one of the lines is, let us pray together to ask the Father's mercy. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's saying he wants to pray with you, and we ask the Father for mercy.
May our thoughts be as one.
Yeah. So those kind of things begin to become a normal part of your prayer life, where your prayer is you're actually talking to your best friend, the one who loves you infinitely, the one who created your soul, the one who wants you to live with him, you know, in heaven forever. And so that realization becomes a part of your prayer.
So you would say to people, just keep praying the rosary and you will get the grace.
Yeah, just keep praying the rosary, but try to think about why you're praying at all. You know, you're praying because you're worshiping God. You're giving thanks to God for what he did for you.
Well, didn't the rosary start out as a way for the common person to unite their prayers to the monks who were actually saying the psalms? But
right.
Back then, people couldn't afford Bibles. They didn't have it in their homes, right?
Right.
So they were saying the prayers that they had memorized
right.
while the monks were actually reading the psalms is what I
right.
always heard.
Yeah, that's what I was told, too.
I like, when I did the rosary, to think about the fruit of the decade, you know, like mm-hmm. when Mary said yes, I think the fruit is humility, you know, and, mm-hmm. and that helps me focus mm-hmm. in more, because I'm not going to remember the psalm, I'm mm-hmm. not going to remember the scripture, but if you have that one concept to think about the whole time you're reciting the prayer, that, mm-hmm. that makes it easier for me.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it too.
Because
so you're
many.
Bringing
There's
virtue so into it, yeah.
There's
exactly.
so many books on it.
Right.
I mean, you can imagine yourself there. You can
right.
meditate
yeah.
on the fruit of the mystery. You
mm-hmm.
could anything.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you start to think about it. It's a lot.
Sure. And one thing that you can think about, too, is, you know, what are the virtues associated with each of the mm-hmm. mysteries? Just like Mary Beth was saying, humility was one. You can look at a patience in some of the sorrowful mysteries, you know, the patience mm-hmm. Jesus had to endure all this kind of stuff. So you look at all the different virtues that involved, that helps you make your prayer more intimate, too.
It's just so amazing when you think about it that it's so perfect. When you look at the mysteries and how they picked them and all that,
yeah.
I'm like, did they spend a long time thinking about this? Or, you know, I'm like...
Well, didn't Blessed Mother give the rosary to St. Dominic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she
yeah.
was the one who
so
picked them. So she pretty much knew what she wanted you to talk about and think about.
And then John Paul added the
luminous room.
Yeah. yeah. And, you know, actually, those are my favorite. And I don't know why, except that they're more relevant, maybe, to our everyday life.
That's probably the case. Because the other ones had this big gap between,
yeah.
you know, the joyful and then the sorrowful.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so he's kind of filled in the everyday life mm-hmm. kind of thing. So that makes it more relevant to you. Yeah. But all those things, that whole idea about about making your prayer life, regardless of, excuse me, regardless of what you're praying, whether it's the rosary or just talking to God, whatever it is, your prayer becomes more intimate. And I think most of you have, you know, experienced that. So that's kind of what you find in this fourth dwelling place. And she goes on in 4.1.3.2. She says, "For when a soul is in one continuous state, I don't consider it safe." So she wants you to be always progressing, always moving. "Nor do I think it's possible for the Spirit of the Lord to be in one fixed state during this exile." And so, why do you think Teresa believes a soul is not safe if it stays in one continuous state? Why does she think the Lord cannot be in one fixed state during his exile? And what exile is she referring to? Is she saying that God changes?
Well, the exile is life on earth, I think.
Right, yeah.
I guess if you're not going, if you're in one state, that there's always the possibility to go backwards.
Right. Yeah, if you're not progressing, you're kind of...
Yeah.
But you got to be in it for a while, though. It's not like you're, you know, taking a step. You got to be... Wouldn't you be in a stage for a little bit, and then...
Well,
so
when
I
you're,
wonder
when
how
you're,
long...
When you're in a state, something's going on. And part of what's going on is that you're getting yourself ready for the next level, the next step. And so there's an activity.
It's really about not becoming complacent in whatever stage you're in.
Yeah.
Right.
Because if you do that, you're not striving to get closer to God.
Right. Right. And that's why you always keep that end goal in mind. That was the danger she talked about before, about the danger of being complacent and stuff. You might be really happy where you are, but you have to keep that end goal in mind, that marital relationship, spiritual marriage with God, is the end state of your goal, your prayer life, because that's as far as we can go while we're still on earth.
And when I think of exile, I think of life as we know it after the fall, and we're no longer in perfect union with God, but that's the state that we were designed to be in, and that's why we need to always be striving to get back to that original state.
Right. Yeah, John Paul talks about that in his Theology of the Body. He talks about original innocence and stuff, and trying to get back. He says, try to get back as close as you can to that original state of spiritual purity and everything else that the Adam and Eve had. And I thought that whole catechesis he gave on Theology of the Body was really absolutely amazing. And so that's... But again, it's putting your mind in union, trying to get yourself to where you're experiencing union with God. I think that's what you're really striving for. And, you know, Teresa talks about mental prayer in one of her writings, and she said it's the frequent and intimate communication with the one who loves you infinitely. So she wants you to pray frequently, and your prayer should be intimate with God. And then Teresa gets in 4141. She had previously said she was going to cover something in the earlier dwelling places that she's now beginning to cover. She speaks of consolations and spiritual delights, and that's what you were asking about, Mary. So how does she define consolations, and how does she define spiritual delights? She gives you the definitions there.
It's on page 318. Joyful consolations and prayer have their beginning in our own nature, human nature, and end in God, where spiritual delights begin in God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You got a different page thing now.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I can't find it.
That's
yeah,
okay.
Confused everybody.
Yeah, then you'll be in this sixth dwelling place. The next page.
Chapter 1.
Page 82 for consolations.
82? Okay.
Yeah, 82 in the paragraph 4.
Yeah,
because the term consolations, I think, can be given to those experiences we ourselves acquire through our own meditation.
Yeah.
Petitions to the Lord.
Right.
And then on page 89 of the study guide, the second paragraph.
Right. So consolations are something that that we oftentimes acquire just from our own experiences. We'll do something and we'll get some kind of consolation and good feeling about it. They proceed from our own nature. Although God in the end does have a hand in them, she says, for it must be understood that in whatever I say that without him we can do nothing. So even though the consolations spring from something we do, he still is playing a part in it by activating those in us. She says, but the consolations arise from the virtuous work itself that we perform. So she's bringing in the idea of virtue here. And it seems that we have earned them through our own effort and are rightly consoled for having engaged in such deeds. But if we reflect upon this, we see that we experience the same joyful consolations in many of the things that happen to us on earth. So she's saying we can have consolations that are spiritual in nature, that make us feel closer to God, but we can also have something very similar in other aspects of our life because they come from our nature. You can have a consolation when your child comes up and gives you a hug and says, I love you, and stuff like that. You know, you can have a lot of these kind of consolations.
So someone that's not religious could also have one.
Right. It's not necessarily religious to have consolation, but you can have religiously motivated consolations. And in spiritual delights, so the spiritual delights begin in God, but human nature feels and enjoys them as much as it does those I mentioned and much more. So the spiritual delights is something that God initiates. They're not initiated from our nature. So God initiates those. They begin in God, but human nature feels and enjoys them. She says, I discern, I think, a very recognizable difference, but I don't have the knowledge to be able to explain myself. She's trying to show there is a difference between the consolation which start in us and the spiritual delights that start in God. So, you know, it's the origin of the experience that she finds very different. And then she uses a Latin phrase there, cum dilasti cor meum, dilatasti. It says, you have expanded my heart. And it comes from Psalm 119. And what she's really talking about here is God expanding our soul, making our soul have greater capacity to receive him. She says, for anyone who has had much experience, these words are sufficient to see the difference between consolations and spiritual delights. The consolations that were mentioned do not expand the heart. Rather, they usually seem to constrain it a little, although there is the greatest consolation in seeing what is done for God. About passions of the soul. It says that I don't know much about the passions of the soul. Knowledge of them might perhaps have enabled me to explain and what proceeds from sensuality and from our human nature, for I am very dull. I think she is anything but dull, but she has to say stuff like that because the Spanish Inquisition would grab her book and so she was very careful in the way she worded things here to not claim that she was, you know. Because she's a woman, they thought she should be, you know, not very bright and all that kind of stuff, which is so stupid. Because she's smarter than anybody she ever came across, you know. but she had to deal with that. Because at this time, they still had her book on her life. They were still examining that. And they had that for like 17 years before they gave it back to her. And so she was afraid they were going to take this one, too. And so she was trying to say stuff to prevent that from happening.
Oh.
And so that's why she says, well, I'm very dull, you know, I'm not very smart. You know,
this is an aside from, I mean, but my girls and I went to an antique shop a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, they have the ladies' desk. And I said, that is so, I mean, the lady's desk, it was small, whereas the man's desk was, and even back, you know, they had that attitude that women couldn't do anything.
Because we just wrote letters and they do business.
Yeah, but I mean, it just hit me that that was...
Still.
Not still, but the attitude and showed itself in furniture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in furniture,
well,
too.
It's still happening, you know?
Yeah.
When we bought our property in Chincoteague, we ran into that same thing. I might have told you that, yeah. We bought a house in Chincoteague Island several years ago, and when Mary Beth was still teaching, and so we could use it in the summertime and stuff like that when she was off. But... We had looked a couple of places, you know, and hadn't really found one. And then one weekend she said, I want to go down to Chincoteague. I saw a couple of things I want to take a look at. You know, you mind if I go look at some houses? I said, no, go ahead. And so she went down there, and she called me, and she said, I found a house. I said, well, good. She said, it's got a fig tree in the back.
Oh.
And I said, buy it. And she knew all I cared about was the fig tree. I didn't care. You know, if she liked the house, I didn't care. You know, I don't care for the house, but I got a fig tree. And so she went and told the lady, I want to put a contract on the house. And she said, but your husband hasn't seen it yet. She said, that's okay. Put a contract on it. She wouldn't do it until she called me.
Is that right?
She had to call me on the phone. So the lady, I'm talking to the realtor on the phone, and she said, your wife is here. I said, yeah. She wants to put a contract on the house. I said, okay. She said, but you haven't seen it yet. I said, okay. She's not stupid. I really, you know, if she likes it, do it. She still was nervous as a cat when we went down to do the closing on the house. She took me over to show me the house before she'd actually take me in there when we signed the papers. And I was just laughing, you know, because, I mean.
But, you know, they never know. And maybe she was afraid you'd back out once you saw
it. She was afraid I'd back out at the last minute, you know.
Yeah.
But she didn't understand, you know. That
it had a fig tree.
Yeah. It just floored me that somebody in this day and age was still thinking that way, you know.
Well, that's true.
Anyway, that's just kind of there. So the distinction between constellations and spiritual lights is the origin, where they originate from. Spiritual lights originate in God. Constellations originate in us because of our nature. And then
they come from God.
What?
They originate in us, but they come from God.
God plays a part in the constellations. They originate from our nature, but then God allows us to have the spiritual experience of the constellation. We can also have constellations that have nothing to do with God, you know, because they're part of our nature. Like, you know, when your grandchild says you're a great grandparent or whatever, you know, it gives you a lot of consolation, but that doesn't necessarily come from God. It comes from your grandchild. But spiritual lights always originate in God, although we experience them. The origination is from God. So that's the big difference there. And so she then gives that quote from the psalm, cum dilatasti cor meum, you have expanded my heart. So what is the significance for Teresa in the quote from the psalm, you have expanded my heart? Do you think she's actually speaking of expanding the soul and perhaps addressing something she had alluded to earlier, increasing the capacity for love in the soul? Why do you think that's what she's really talking about?
She says, I think this must be the center of the soul.
Yeah.
So we need to experience union with God, so
yeah,
we need to have the capacity to do that.
Exactly. So she's really, you know, when people in spiritual writings talk about the heart, they're always talking really about the soul,
because
mm-hmm. your heart's just an organ; it pumps blood, right? But it's the it's your soul that they're really talking about. And when you say you expand the soul, she makes a mention a few different times in here about how we can never put limits on the capacity of the soul, that has an unlimited capacity to grow and experience love for God and everything else. And so that's kind of an example of what she's talking about here. The psalmist understood this. David said, you know, you expand my soul, expand my heart. And she's saying the same thing goes on here, that the more we love God, the greater our capacity for love increases. And that's something about love that she's trying to make a point of here, that is very important. That love is the one thing that the more we give it away, the more it grows in us and the greater capacity we have for it. When you get really stingy with your love, then you become a shriveled up old person that you know, is like a miserly, you know, Scrooge and stuff like this.
Scrooge, yeah.
But when you love, the more you do love, the greater your capacity for love is. And that's what she's doing here. She's saying, the more we love God, the greater the capacity for love will be. So the more we love God, the more He gives us the grace to love Him even more. So the more love we show God, He's going to give us the grace to love Him that much more. And so it's like a never-ending process. Mm-hmm. And that's what the saints go through. You know, they have this capacity for love that allows them to just go straight to heaven. And that's the real crux of what she's talking about here. And then Father Kavanaugh had a note. He said that he points out that the spiritual delight. He has those notes in the study edition, mm-hmm. you know, which are kind of neat. He points out that spiritual delights are given to the spirit, and that is why these experiences. In these experiences, there is the feeling of expansion. Since the spirit is not in the body, but the body is in the spirit, our spirit is much more than the body and doesn't feel restricted by it when we begin to experience the spirit more in infused prayer. So when God is giving himself to us in this infusion of prayer, our soul just expands, our capacity to receive Him expands. It doesn't feel restricted by it when we begin to experience Spirit more in infused prayer, which Teresa also calls supernatural prayer or contemplation. Infused prayer means the prayer is given by God directly to the Spirit, and in this initial stage, it is experienced passively in the Spirit. That is in the depths of our being as quiet, peace, and love. So it's something God infuses in us. It's called prayer because prayer is any communication we have with God. That's a form of prayer. It's any kind of communication we have with God is a form of prayer. So when He comes to us and infuses Himself in us, He's usually giving us a better understanding of Himself. Mm-hmm. He's teaching us Himself, basically. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of prayer is important because it's entirely supernatural. It comes directly from God, but is infused into our soul, into our spirit. And because of His nature, it comes into the depths of our being as quiet, peace, and love. What did Jesus tell the apostles? You know, peace I give you, my peace I give you. And John tells us that God is love. So when He comes in to our soul and expands our capacity, He's giving us Himself. He's giving us that divine peace and that love that He is. He's giving us Himself. And then in 4161, she talks about the consolations that she herself had from meditation. She says, in speaking of the consolations Teresa had from meditation, which led her to tears over the passion or over her own sins, she says, but finally, as I have said, they end in God regardless of their nature. They are to be esteemed if there is the humility to understand that one is no better because of experiencing them, for it cannot be known whether they are effects of love. When they are, the gift is God's. So here she's talking about just consolations, not the spiritual delights. And she says she receives those consolations when she meditates on the passion or thinks about her own sins and is so sorry about her own sins. Those things that were part of her life or part of Jesus' life that she can, you know, kind of relate to and think about. But again, they're just consolations from her meditation. And the meditation is an active activity of the soul, of the spirit. So she's meditating. Mostly they're activities of the imagination. When you do a meditation, you're mostly letting your imagination, you know, take over, and it's driving it. So when she's using her active imagination to think about the passion or thinking about her own sins, she says, but they end in God, because what I'm thinking about is leading me to be more appreciative of God, closer to God, thinking about the things of God. And so they end in God regardless of their nature. So they are to be esteemed if there is the humility to understand that one is no better because of experiencing them, because they come from you. So you haven't really gotten better, you've just gotten more appreciative of God. But your soul has not expanded as it does with spiritual delights, because they come directly from God. So is she saying that consolations from meditation have no spiritual effect on the soul, or is she saying something else?
Well, does that mean that you're progressing then or not? Because you're doing the same thing, but now you're appreciating God more.
But you are progressing, because even though the consolations begin in you, they have a spiritual effect, because they make you more appreciative of God. You look at the passion of Christ, you think about that. It really makes you appreciate what he did for you. And so you're looking at the way you offended him in the past, and you're much more sorrowful of that. You have more contrition, repentance, and stuff. So all those things have a spiritual effect. So even though the meditations arise, God's consolations arise from your nature, from what you did, they end up with a spiritual effect because of what they lead you to. So that's the difference between that and spiritual consolation just come to you. You know, they just boom, all of a sudden they hit you. So they do have a spiritual effect on the soul because of how you feel as a result of it.
That's why saints are always meditating on the passion.
Exactly. Yeah. One of them said that you cannot do anything more efficacious for your soul than to meditate on the passion. I forget which one said that. One of them. I read it in one of my books.
Probably several.
Yeah. I read it in one of my books somewhere a long time ago. Okay, 4162. In speaking of souls experiencing these devout feelings, mostly in the previous dwelling places, resulting from the intellect engaging in discursive thought and meditation, she says it would be a good thing if they engaged in acts of love, acts of praise for God, etc. For such things are great awakeners of the will. Such souls would be well advised, when the Lord gives them these acts, not to abandon them for the sake of finishing the usual meditation. Why is it important that the will be awakened? If these meditations awaken your will, why is that important? What is the will?
Is it because it wants you to do an act of love, and then you can grow in that?
Yeah. Because the two faculties of the soul are the intellect and the will. You're using your imagination to do the meditation, but the effect of that is that it has an effect on your will, so that you begin to love God more because of what you experienced during your meditation. And so because love is an act of the will, anything that helps you to love God more is going to help increase your capacity of your soul to love.
Well, didn't somebody say that faith without works is empty or something to that effect? I mean, it's not enough to believe in God and love God. Your actions have to really prove that you do.
Yeah.
Now, if you say you love your neighbor, but you do nothing to help your neighbor, do you really love your neighbor?
Well, not really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there have to be...
And you're absolutely dead on with that because, you know, James's letter says that faith without works is empty. But Teresa says that too. In fact, when we get to the fifth dwelling places, she says that the way you know you love God, you can't always know you love God enough because you're just looking at yourself and how do I know, you know? She says the way you know you love God is by how much you love your neighbor. She says, we've got to love God, we've got to love our neighbor, we've got to do those two things. How do you know you love God? By how much you love your neighbor. So she's going to go into that in more detail in the fifth dwelling places.
But she didn't live in the world with the neighbors like we have.
But she had loved
She had them. Earlier.
Yeah. But they're supposed to be good people.
But they are women.
But she had a lot of experiences too, you know. Think of what she's going through with the Inquisition.
That's
you
true.
Know?
Yeah.
And then she had these confessors that were driving her nuts because they couldn't understand what she was going through. Mm-hmm. They were telling her that she was experiencing things from the devil and all this kind of stuff like that, you know.
Awful.
You know, so she had to really have a lot of love for these guys. But a lot of was scared to death to hear her confession because she'd tell them the truth, you know. And these guys were sitting out there shaking in their boots in the hallway waiting to hear her confession, you know. Until finally she got a hold of the Jesuits and they understood what she was doing. And then she found John of the Cross, and of course they were doing really well. The thing that really, really I almost died when I read it. She talks about being afraid of attachments to things, and she felt she was getting too attached to John of the Cross. So she had all these letters from him that she threw away because she was afraid she was getting... Think of the spiritual lessons we could have learned from what was in those letters, you know? I mean, when I read that she threw them away, I said, oh, my God, you know, what a treasure trove that she threw away. But,
Well, I mean, St. Faustina, she burned her stuff, too.
Yeah. Over. That's the thing, yeah.
Well, what does it mean by this... So, it says, such souls would be well advised when the Lord gives them these acts, this awakenness, not to abandon them for the sake of finishing their usual meditation. So you would not finish your meditation. You would follow whatever this prompting was.
Yeah. What she's talking about there is, if you're doing something, regardless of what it is, praying the rosary, you're meditating on something, all of a sudden, you receive something from God.
Like, go make a meal for your neighbor. Would you
could
stop,
be that, or it could
stop
be
stop what you're doing and go do that.
Or could be praying for something totally different.
Oh,
maybe
okay.
You're praying for something, and all of a sudden you get the feeling that, yeah, I got to stop and pray something else. You know.
But you said before that it's the devil that tries to get you to change direction, and
even if it's a good
else.
Thing.
Yeah,
but you're not changing direction because you're responding to what God is sending you.
But
you have to have a certain amount of discernment in here, too.
Yeah.
Because anything that God, the devil sends you is never going to be for good. And so look, what is the end result of this, you know? If you're sitting there praying and you get something that says, I want you to go wallow in a mud creek or something, you know. You know that's coming from the devil or something. That's not from God, you know. But if they say go help somebody, I mean, I told you before the story about when I was washing dishes, right?
Yeah.
You remember? Okay. So I didn't know where that came from, but I knew somebody needed help. So I stopped what I was doing and sat down and prayed for whoever was depressed. Until that whole feeling went away, then I finished the dishes. You know, those kind of things. It's not earth shattering. You know, it can be something really simple like that. Just take off for 5 minutes and pray for something. You know, but you don't ignore it. Is the point she's making? When something like that comes in, and you get something that's a pretty clear indication that they want you to do something else that's also good, then you go stop and go do that, you know?
Because sometimes I won't be doing something, I don't know if it's praying or you're reading, and then you see something in it and you think, oh, I got a book on that. I got something that goes into that. And then I'm like, you know, and then you spend like 5 minutes going through the bookcase looking for it. And then, I don't know. So then like, you wonder, was it?
It could be calling you to do that, you know? I know when I first started journaling, I think I told you about those two books I found, right? When I first started journaling, I used to write down questions as well as things that were happening. And through a whole series of things, which are too long to go into, I saw this ad for these two books by Father John Aaron Terra called The Mystical Evolution of the Church. And something told me to buy them, you know? So I got the books. I picked up volume one, I started reading, said, oops, there's the answer to question number one, you know? I kept on going, oops, there's the answer to number two, you know? And so I was finding something told me to get the books, and I did. And then all the questions I was having were answered right in this book, you know? And I started laughing when I was reading. I said, now I know why I got these books, you know? Because they're answering all my questions. But those are the kind of things that happen, you know? And so you just don't ignore it. You respond to it. And usually it's for the good. But like Teresa will say later on, you know, it's you show your love for God by how much you love your neighbor. And so whenever you have a reason or a need to do something loving for your neighbor, don't ignore that. You know, don't ignore that. So the will needs to be awakened simply because that's one of the two faculties of the soul. And since love is an act of the will, once the will is activated, then love becomes activated, and then your capacity for love can increase. If all you're relying on is your imagination, your capacity for love is not going to increase. It has to be an act of the will. You choose to love God. You choose to love your spouse. You choose to love your children. It's an act of the will. And then Father Kavanaugh points out in his notes here that in the midst of her difficulty with discursive meditation, that she was having a lot of problems with meditation because her rules of her order were saying you got to spend a certain amount of time each day in meditation, and it was driving her crazy because she couldn't
keep focused.
Keep focused. She couldn't think of what it was driving her nuts. So the only way she ever dealt with it was by reading spiritual books. And she had one in particular she liked called the Sinner's Diary, which the Inquisition burned. Luckily, a copy survived, and so you can get it from Tam Books now. But she had a real difficulty with discursive meditations. And she was trying to explain this to confessors, and they didn't understand her. So she found no confessor who could help her. It was the Lord who came to her aid and taught her a manner of proceeding in prayer that gave her satisfaction. She discussed this in her book, The Way of Perfection, beginning in chapter 26 and particularly in chapter 29. She calls it the Prayer of Recollection. And I just checked again yesterday for the brochures on the Prayer of Recollection, and they're still out of print. But they should be soon, because the friar said they were hoping to get it out pretty soon after Easter. And so they should be soon. As soon as those are available, we'll get some. You get 25 of them for $4, you know. So
I think I looked up what it was and how she had these little steps of what she thought you should do.
If you have the book of her life, it's the Way of Perfection of the book of her life.
I have her autobiography, but not the Way of Perfection.
It's the...
I have to look it up.
That's Way of Perfection, yeah. If you look in the Way of Perfection, chapters 26 and then particularly 29, she goes into the detail of it. And she talks about that. I read through it. I have that book. and so I think, but I think the little brochure kind of condenses all that down mm-hmm. into these the essence of it, you know. So that's why I want to get it for you guys, because it's be pretty good. But if you have her book, you can go start with chapter 26 and go to 29, and you can see how she develops this idea of the prayer of reconciliation. And she says she got this from Jesus, mm-hmm. that he gave her this way of so that's how she dealt with her difficulties in meditation. And that's why I think it'd be helpful for us to understand what that is too. Yeah. She calls it the prayer of recollection and says, this prayer is called recollection because the soul, through its own efforts, collects its faculties together and enters within itself to be with God. It says the soul, through its own effort, collects its faculties. The soul has two faculties, intellect and will. And so you collect the faculties together and enter within itself to be with God. And that's where she gets this idea about getting into our soul and then moving within our soul. And that's what led her to write the whole interior castle thing. And its divine master comes more quickly to teach it and give it the prayer of quiet that he would through any other. Comes more quickly to teach it and give it the prayer of quiet than he would through any other method it might use. So the way of perfection, 28:4, where she says that. So if you have her book on the way of perfection, you can read all about it there, or just wait till the brochures come out and we'll give you those. So why does Teresa suggest abandoning meditation under the condition described? Is there a connection between this and Lectio Divina? What did she tell you in Lectio Divina as a way of prayer? You know what Lectio Divina is?
Reading the scripture?
Yeah, you read the scriptures, and then you just start reading them, and then you read them slowly and think about what you're reading, and then if something really pops out at you, mm-hmm. you know, because you, that happens a lot when you read scriptures, something you never thought about before all of a sudden pops out at you, you stop and just pay attention to that one thing mm-hmm. and think about that for a while. So she has a little book also, we'll call it Lectio Divina, and you can get that from ICS Publications as well. It's a kind of a small book, it's real thin, but it's her approach to Lectio Divina. But there is there's a connection there, because she's saying when you get this from Jesus while you're trying to meditate, you stop your meditation and focus on what he's sending you in this recollection. And then that's the same thing you really do in Lectio Divina. You're reading the scriptures, and then as soon as something jumps out at you, you stop and pay attention to that one thing.
She's just saying be open to the promptings of God. You know, if you're doing something, but God yeah. wants you to do something different or right. in more depth, he's going to let you know.
Right, you pay attention
and
to God.
And it's up to us to make sure that we're not so on a mission. You know, I got to finish this rosary out. And my child's right. crying yeah. over there and starving, you know, yeah. hungry. You need to be open.
That's right. So responding to God is more important than just finishing whatever the prayer is that you were doing.
Agenda.
Yeah, right, the agenda. So let's stop here because it's almost 10:30. So we'll pick up at 4171 next time. So we'll keep doing that. I sent out the questions for the fifth dwelling place to you, and I sent a copy to Jim. So get those. If you need a copy besides that, just let me know, and I'll
bring
it for you. Anybody have any thoughts on anything we covered today? Okay.
Thank you.
Did it make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Because if you ever have any questions or anything on it, just speak up or send me an email or something or whatever, and we'll deal with it. Okay. See you next week.
Have a blessed week.
You too.